Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment.
I'm Matt.
And I'm Alex.
And I'm Kerry.
Welcome, guys, back to the Game Junkies podcast. First show with all three of us as a proper trio. It's awesome to have us all here. Alex, are you being sick again this week? No, you're here, aren't you?
Yes.
I say being sick. He was busy editing, and as you guys probably heard, it was an excellent edit. But of course, you're here to talk about more D&D with me and Kerry this week, which is always a good thing to talk about. But before we get to that, we're going to talk about some of the new stuff that's been going on recently. So, Alex, did you want to go first with your news topic? Because it's fairly fresh in your mind.
All right. So, though by the time this goes out, this will be a day old, it'd still be relevant because of how big it is, and I'm sure people might miss it. The Resident Evil Village showcase is happening tonight. As we're speaking, it's happening tonight, but it will be less than a day old tomorrow. So, oh, wait, no. It'll be 2 days old, my bad.
It will be.
I keep thinking it's Friday, you know.
It's okay. The days blend together, man, Alex. It's fine.
Time is irrelevant.
You might want to catch up on that, because from what I've seen from Resident Evil Village so far, it does look really good.
It is. It looks beautiful. It looks proper scary again. They've said that Capcom have once again reinvented the horror genre. Which, given how terrifying Resident Evil 7 was, is going to take some doing. For those people who haven't played Resident Evil 7 yet, it's been four years at this point, guys. Come on. The protagonist from the last game, Ethan Winters, is back in this one again, and he's up against Chris Redfield, who Alex may know from. Who's the brother of Claire from Resident Evil 2, of course. We don't know at this moment how big of a role Chris Redfield's got, but Chris Redfield's a massive character in the canon, and the fact that when we saw him in the DLC, he was working for Umbrella, which is something we weren't expecting at the time. They're also meant to be announcing a part of this Village stream, another project.
So, Resident Evil 2 Resistance.
No, Resident Evil 2, Resident Evil 3 were both excellent games, as we talked about the last couple of years. The next game in the canon to reboot would be Code Veronica,
which I've heard is pretty good.
It's one of the it's got one of the best storylines in the original games. I first played it on the PS2. It obviously was on the Xbox and the GameCube, and it was a piece of absolute genius. It had the same game controls, which you didn't like at EGX, Alex, when you tried Resident Evil 1. But I imagine they'd update it to the same control system they used Resident Evil 2 and 3. So that won't be too much of a problem. Resident Evil is one of Capcom's biggest things right now. Do you remember when you played Resident Evil 2, Alex, and you got the little Capcom, little stars badge?
Yeah.
Why did Capcom never make those as, you know, stuff you could buy?
I have no idea, actually.
Capcom, you dropped the ball there.
It's a bit like Fallout 4. They make the Pip-Boy. They make the Pip-Boy in every game they've done so far, and that sells that game really well. So why haven't they done that yet?
No idea. Kerry, you've in your experience, do you pick up a lot of peripherals to go with games that, you know, from in the game itself?
Don't really know enough about the games to have a strong opinion on them.
Fair enough, but
to be honest.
Anything gimmicky that you pick up from like other games, for example. I know, for example, like the Pokeball Plus, for example, for like Pokemon. I remember that was a thing a few years ago.
Hmm.
Do you any like faddy little gimmicks which come to mind which you liked?
The only things I can think of are for my beloved Farm Sim games. If you used to pre-order the old ones, you couldn't buy them, which was a shame because they were really cute. With some of them, you'd get a little stuffed version of the newest animal you could have on your farm.
I remember
things
that.
Like that. Like, I've got the rabbit from when they introduced rabbits, and I've got the little capybara from another one.
That definitely counts. That 100% counts. Absolutely, because it's a good thing to help promote the game. And
and Harvest Moon is the only sort of game that you could say we have capybaras, and people be like, "Oh, yay!" Because if he was like, "Welcome to Far Cry 6, we have capybaras," no one would be interested.
Why would? But they're like huge guinea pigs.
Everyone loves cute guinea pigs. So yeah, everyone should be keeping an eye out for an evil village, definitely. I've got some news for you about Valve, Alex. Now, Valve, for people who have been living under a rock, are the owner of they own Steam, obviously, and they've infamously behind things like Left 4 Dead 1 and 2, which were amazing games. But obviously, since they've been swimming around in their Scrooge McDuck money bin, counting the money from Steam, they've been given quite a huge fine. Though them and five other publishers have been fined a total of £6.9 million.
Yikes.
For restricting cross-border sales of PC video games. Geo-blocking means games are locked, so a cheaper license intended for less well-off European countries can't be used elsewhere, which stops gamers from shopping around for best deals, and the EU did not like that, so they sued them and won. So not only are Valve fine, but so have Bandai Namco and Capcom.
Oh, Jesus.
ZeniMax, Koch Media from Germany.
Of course, that would come from Germany.
Of course. A French developer, Focus Home. All five cooperated with the commission and had their original fines reduced, but the commission said that Valve did not cooperate and were fined more than $1.4 million with no reduction. Valve have denied this, and the statement they put out said it has cooperated extensively, providing all requested evidence and information. Approximately just 3% of all games using Steam at the time were subjected to the contested region lock, says the spokesperson Doug Lombardi. It's an awkward issue there, because at the last check, Steam offers around 44,000 games on its marketplace, which is less
than
Steam
is huge. Obviously, you don't have Steam, but
I do.
Oh, you do?
I don't use it often, but I have it. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. When you go on there for like summer and winter sales, I think my Steam games list is probably bigger than my Xbox library list. It's just ridiculous what you can get on Steam for how cheap it can be.
You can get some incredibly great games on the PC.
PCs are expensive to build, but when it comes to gaming, once they're built, it's cheap as chips compared to console.
Absolutely. And some of the games you can play on the Mac as well. Some you can't, which is annoying for me because I tend to use my Mac for everything. But there is certain things that Mac is starting to get more opened up, which is good. But yeah, that's quite a large fine. And apparently all the publishers form deals with each other, which is what we're treated to cross sell border games according to the EU and the EC. Not good overall. Even without Valve, who are global, that's Bandai Namco, Koch Media and Capcom, three of the biggest ones in the whole of...
Yeah. Namco and Capcom. Capcom amazes me. Like, I wouldn't have... You wouldn't have thought that, would you?
You wouldn't have done, but hopefully that will stop people from doing that now.
And the first Namco game I played was on DS, and that was Combat Giant Dinosaurs.
That was a fantastic game.
Where it was dinosaur versus dinosaur, and you had to, on the DS, on the bottom screen, you had to use the stylus to draw in the picture of the dinosaur to do the most damage.
Which was really great until, like me, you had a wanky DS with a really bad touch screen.
Oh, that game was so much fun.
It was fantastic. I had a little velociraptor on it.
Without a doubt, the most vicious of all of the dinosaurs, without a doubt. Right, last bit of news I've got is, as of recording on the 21st, as Alex said, yesterday, Hitman 3 dropped worldwide. I've been looking forward to this game for a while, and it's already my game of the year. I'm aware we're in January, but it's going to take something special for any game to beat this year.
I don't even really know what's coming out this year, to be honest.
Everything will be put back and put back and put back. But Hitman, at no point was it put back at any point. So far, I am 2/3 of the way through the main story mode for the second time, because everyone was downloading at the same time yesterday, the servers couldn't hold up. The servers... Today are fine, but it was more case of one at a time, because they got this wonderful thing where you can carry over all your data from Hitman 2 to Hitman 3 for free, which is great, but it's a one-time thing. But everyone was trying to do it at the same time, so everyone was trying to log in to do the cross. I finally managed to do it today, and it carried everything over for me, and that's good because it saved me about $100.
Yeah, that's pretty solid. That's a bit like back when the first Heist DLC came out, when you only had one generation of GTA Online. Mm. You could not stay in a server for the first week of the game being out.
Mm. And the good thing is, as well, is that if you've played Hitman on mobile consoles, you can choose which of the files you upgrade to which one.
Mm.
Which is a really cool thing as well. Hitman VR is obviously at the same time. I haven't played the VR version yet because I'm still recovering from COVID myself. But I also haven't paid out for a second set of the game yet because it's not exactly cheap. It's on PlayStation, obviously. But I will be I'll be hooking up at some point. Apparently, it's back a little bit in terms of graphics because... Obviously, on the X and the S, you go into like a German club, and there's at least 300 people in there, no problem. In the VR, it's not quite as many, maybe like 50, 60, which is still more than enough. But it's little things like reflections in the glass that aren't quite there. It's little things that you notice, but doesn't really affect the game.
Yeah.
And VR is something I'm a champion of. I will champion it until the cows come home. Just looking to see how they go about it, because Hitman is one of my favorite game series, as you know, Alex. If you throw it into VR as well, I think I may end up spending several hours playing it and needing to be talked off down, talked down off a windowsill because I've climbed up trying to get in through a window somewhere.
That was the only time Matt would ever kill a man, by snipping the wire, connecting the VR, saying that's enough Hitman.
enough Hitman for today, yes. It's amazing how you can follow the stories in that game. So you can go from point to point to point and just finish the levels, or you can just go... Because they put you at the start level, and they say, all yours. You literally have that much freedom. I'm guessing if Kerry was to play Hitman, she'd be very sneaky, to use as many outfits as possible and only kill the target. Alex would pretty much kill that person, kill that security.
I would
Kilbyshev.
I would drive in with a tank that has 72 machine guns attached to it all.
You would kill Kilbyshev with his own carving knife.
My brother is not a subtle person.
No, he is not.
I do not do subtle in video games.
No.
It's like Assassin's Creed, Valhalla, stealth your way in, or kill everyone.
You can literally kill everyone on the level in Hitman if you wish to, but it's not necessarily the wisest move, shall we say.
Does it earn you, like, the least amount of points killing everybody, or...?
Yes, it does, yes.
My knowledge of Hitman is fairly limited, to be honest, but...
I'm a massive fan of it, and I'd recommend anyone out there, if you're undecided about it, yeah, go and check it out on one of the various YouTube channels, or, if you want... go and check out our YouTube channel. You can check out me playing a bit of Hitman 2. Getting warmed up, ready for Hitman 3. Bit of promo there. Why not? Indeed. Why not, indeed? Speaking of things that we record, how about the three of us park the news here and we talk about something we've all got incredible passion for. And let's do our part two of our D&D memories and tips for new DMs. Right, so you want to do is Alex, go.
All right, so I'll do a tip for a DM first. And my first tip is always try to fit in with your players.
Okay.
So, like, for example, I was telling Kerry this the other day. Yours, as it happens, and Caitlin's really interfered with my original plans, like, of what I had planned.
Yes.
You particularly, because of how long you've been in, how many people you've encountered. So once I had a chat with you and worried out a little things without, like, destroying what you gave me, I just changed my backstory, my world, to fit that in. And I think that's such an important thing. Mm. Like, you can't railroad a party. It just destroys the fun of that. When I got Matt's character for my campaign, aka Reed, yes. And I got Caitlin's character, which is a lie, mainly Reed, but they had both different backstories and backgrounds to what I had planned and what I expected everyone to give me. So it interfered with so much that I had planned. But unless it truly destroys what you do and you can do something that they'll enjoy because of it, you make edits to fit them in so they get to play what they want to play. And I think that's just such an important part of being a DM.
Being flexible.
Yeah, yeah, you have to be flexible and you have to allow your players to do what your players want to do.
Mm.
Otherwise, you ruin the fun for them.
And I've done a bit of that with you two, actually, as well, because obviously you two were the original two in the order. And where Alili and Rain are now is very far from where they were when it started.
Yes.
Yes, I will be honest. I completely agree with that.
But I feel that because we've discussed them at some considerable length, I will say, off air, obviously, because, you know, there's certain things you wanted to bring to these characters, and I'm like, I can make that work.
Yeah.
I can totally make that work. Because at the end of the day, a D&D world should be fluid. It's meant to be alive. It's meant to be... this, it's not meant to be like that is that, that is that, that is that, and that is where it's got to be, sort of thing. If that was the case, I could have killed you a lot off in the first episode.
Yeah. And
I mean, we
damn you didn't.
Stormed into a castle and murdered a king, a count.
Yes.
In real life, we would have had to deal with plenty of guards and have been executed.
Yes. Instead,
we yeeted out a window, Alili made the jump, I didn't, and then I ran vertically up a wall.
Yeah. Looking back, that was extremely good fun. That there's so much in that first episode which I was not expecting, and of course, you guys now know, of course, is that if you guys had actually gone down and actually freed and actually helped the bard, you would have actually not had to worry about Count Dragon returning at any point during the series.
Paladin guilt intensifies.
He wanted to stab the bard again, intensifies.
Unfortunately, you turned him to ashes now, so you can't.
Rain contentified.
Always a good thing. Okay, so that's something as a tip, Alex, that you wanted to give to new DMs. What about some memories from you then? Because me and Kerry gave plenty 2 weeks ago of our own. So we'd like to hear some of your memories.
Memories. What is a real standout for me? I think a real standout for me is what happened in Caitlin's second episode.
Okay.
Because 1 minute we were fighting, and then the next minute, ignoring the part where Sam's wearing the big boy pants doing the work and you're dancing around praising a purple dinosaur. But we went from fighting and killing to just a really wholesome moment between Dakota and Varys.
It was quite an intense moment. I like that. But as you say, you contrast it with the comedy side of it, because I was in a cone of silence, basically, so I figured I'd just press the mute button on my microphone, and then it's actually, instead of pretending to do the actual song, and I actually did the song out loud, because that way, if you're not faking it, you can actually make it look much better. And the fact that and the most important part about D&D is when you say something, it happens.
No take backs.
Yeah, I do not let my... The only take backs I've ever let happen is you open firing.
I open fire.
That is the only take backs I've ever let happen when I'm in an episode.
Little peek behind the curtain, for people who may not know. Obviously, me and Alex have waxed lyrical massively about how massive fans we are of York Venture. I did steal that from Andy's character Corazon, who is a pirate. And he got pissed off by a jester, so he just said, "Open fire."
I was wondering when that happened, because the problem is there's so many episodes I lose track of what happened in some.
I remember most of the early ones, thankfully, but it was intense. It was extremely funny. I like the fact that Reed has that. Basically, I'm going to shoot you sort of thing, but also at the same time, he thinks he's a big pirate, and he's a 3-foot-tall small bastard man.
Reed is such a great character.
Small bastard man.
He is literally a pint-sized Corazon in personality.
And the thing is that, as I've said before, I originally designed Reed to be a comedic character. Until I got the full spiel from Alex, I was like, I ain't changing him. I'm keeping Reed how he is, which is why when Graham from Good Cop Bad Cop listened, he doesn't listen to a lot of D&D because it's not for him.
Yeah.
But he let it play once because at the time we were on a Friday and this was going out on a Sunday, so it just went straight through. And the episode that came out at the time was when Reed debuted. And so I introduced myself as Reed Toscobble, and every time I say that name, it makes him laugh out loud.
I mean, when you did give me Toscobble, I was wondering if you were serious.
I was 100% serious, mainly because it's actually in the suggestions for halfling surnames.
Seriously?
It's actually in the suggestions for halfling surnames. So, like, I'll take it.
That's brilliant.
First name suggestions, surname suggestions. So I took it. I put the two together. I like, works. Sometimes it just works. I mean, Ran is one of my favourite characters.
Ran.
And it's amazing how, I mean no offense with this at all, it's amazing how simple RAN is as a concept. But there are layers upon layers upon layers to that character we don't even know about yet.
You have no idea.
Without pulling back the curtain too far, RAN is still technically a child. Noel's apparently reached maturity at 5. RAN is 3. I had it in my head that they reached maturity at 3 for some reason.
Excellent.
And in her short life, RAN has seen a lot of shit. So she has no patience for anyone's shit anymore.
Works for me.
That's why you don't touch Gurr.
You do not touch Gurr. You'll be picking up your teeth with your broken fingers if you do.
And for those who haven't listened to the episode where we find Gurr, what is Gurr?
Gurr is a stuffed animal that was stolen by Ally and given to RAN. Gurr is the only possession RAN has ever owned, and it's her most prized treasure. And if you touch Gurr, there are consequences.
Noted. Absolutely 100% noted. What else did that stand out to you? I mean, you need time to think here while we've been
talking. Yeah, speaking of Ally, I'm actually... Is it all right to talk about my campaign? Because it feels a bit...
Of course you can talk about your campaign. Like, it's what stands out to you. And it, no offence, our campaigns stand out to us. So.
And to be fair, it just kind of furthers what we said last time about how Alex's campaign is the bee's knees.
When I listened to that episode, I was so touched by that. I will be honest.
Anyway, talk more about pirates.
In what's recently come out, like the day before that released, which was Snow Hope Part 2, the first confrontation between Ally and Riley. Because that was all on the spot. Like, I made that up as I was going. Riley was there, but Riley wasn't meant to appear till later, but you lot were getting through the session a whole lot faster than I expected you to.
I know that feeling well, trust me.
As in, like, your recent one?
Yeah.
So I decided to bring in Riley then to slow them down. So the entire description of, like, I'm not going to get into it just in case anyone hasn't heard the episode yet, but everything that happened with that conversation was all on the spot. Just, I made that up as I went along, which I'm so happy with.
But that's great, though. One of the things that I've learned is that you have to get good at improv. When you're doing DMing, you have to get good at it. And that was a great example, Alex, of how far you've come. Kerry, you do a great job of improv.
Thank you.
Well. I remember that you had to improv quite a large chunk of an episode which you are editing at the moment, recording.
At the time of recording, is coming out tomorrow.
Which means it will be out yesterday, isn't this now? It was a stunning piece of work. It really, really was.
The best part was I was derailed literally within the first 3 minutes. I had to improvise half of it. It's like, shit.
Yeah.
Alex sent me some audio this morning and said, is that word where Kerry sent me this? I think this would cheer you up. So I played it, and at the end of it, I was like, stop killing people.
Oh, yeah, the famous, stop fucking killing!
To be fair, Moira has fully embraced her role as the mum of the group.
You guys are all going to give Oberyn a stroke one day, though, I predict it.
He's already coming.
I did say to Kerry the other day that Oberyn is very, like, up his own ass. Like, even more than Corazon. Corazon. Corazon.
I absolutely love Oberyn's character, though.
Corazon. Like, he gives Mick a run for his money when it comes to being up his own ass.
Yes, that's fine, obviously. Because, you know, those characters... Chad is a fantastic role player.
He does incredible at it.
Because in real life, he's nothing like that. he's nothing. I mean, you've chatted with him at length, Alex, before, haven't you? Before,
yeah.
And he's nothing like that at all in real life. He really is actually quite a nice guy, which just goes to show how good a role player he really is.
It's like his scope for voices as well. It's fantastic.
Bro.
Picasso killed me because I had no idea that was coming. And that wasn't even Picasso's original voice.
I didn't.
It was literally last second he decided to roll with that. Like, just as Picasso walked in, he decided to change his mind on the voice. I did not see that coming.
I don't know if you guys remember, but I'm not sure if it was that first episode of Chad's of your campaign or second episode where I read, so they clicked the place. Oh, your Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
Wait, hold on, sorry, what was that?
It clicked quite late for me. It wasn't until he actually, until I started thinking about other Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles named after artists, I was like, oh, I got it now. Sometimes I'm so slow on the uptake.
I don't think I left that in any episode. I don't think I left that in the episodes. I'm not entirely sure.
I think you did, which is fine.
I can't remember. My memory is shit, so I'm not too sure what episode
that's in. It's been better, it's been worse. But any more memories, Mr. Alex?
I'm just having a quick think on that.
Whilst you're thinking, Kerry, any thoughts from you? Any thoughts from you, quickly?
I'm going to follow Alex and start out with another DM tip.
Go ahead.
Communication between everybody. Yes. I'm not specifically looking at Zoran from a long time back. Well, one of my favourite
Zoran
memories.
Was just a disaster. As much as I liked that build, I shouldn't have made that character. It's not something I was capable of role-playing.
Okay, Kerry, explain.
Well, apart from one of my fondest memories of Zoran is Caitlin yelling at Alex communication.
Oh, because of the doors.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. Because the fact that there's Chad, Caitlin and me, we're trying to methodically think about which door to go through. And Alex is like, this one will do.
Because you guys are taking too long, and my granddad Lion didn't have the patience for that. I mean, he's 300 years old, he's only got like 20 years left.
I do get that. But at the same time, we were in hell.
At the time of recording of that, Alex and I used to record in the same room, and it took everything I had not to push him off that chair. Because he was starting to do my head in. But it's kind of going on from what Alex said about with his DM tip.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I know what I'm trying to say. I'll get there in a second.
It's okay.
Just communication. If you're not happy with something, talk to the DM. Talk to your players. Communication is important.
Absolutely.
In my last episode, at the time of recording this, I ran into a bit of a snag which could have been avoided. It's sorted now, but it made me realise all the more how important communication between everybody is.
That's a really good tip. Right.
Alex got there.
Yeah, it took me a minute to realise that, and as I say, I'm sometimes a bit slow to catch on, but I get what you mean.
I put it kind of cryptically, so...
Everyone needs to communicate at all times because, end of the day, it is a story. It is a collaborative storytelling experience. And if you aren't communicating, then you're not telling the story together. So,
if you put off communicating about any issues that arise, all you're doing is like it's going to come crashing down eventually.
Yeah. Can we elaborate a little bit on it? Because I'm happy to, if Alex is.
Yeah.
I mean, this episode will, your episode will be out by the time this is released.
Yeah.
So we could talk about it.
Yeah. Am I allowed to specifically say what happened, or?
I think I know a way to do a spoiler way of doing it.
Okay.
Spoiler free way of doing things. Basically, some creatures that the team had to fight provoked a unwelcome reaction from one of the players.
This, as the DM, I take full responsibility for that. I did put the idea across, and it was okayed, but I should have pushed a bit harder to just really make sure it was okay. It was a spur-on-the-moment idea I had, which was like, aha, this is quite cool. And there was, I suppose, a complication to it. So when I asked about it, I was like, yeah, it'll be fine. But it goes back to the communication. Like, just an okay, it's like, maybe you should push just for that. Are you really sure this is okay?
It never hurts to, you know, be doubly, triply sure. I was looking for the last session I ran a certain creature. I was looking for a creature to work with. As it turned out, spoilers, and this is going to be something I'm going to talk about my GM tip in a minute. Sometimes your players will neatly cut your quest in half, and that sometimes happens. And when that happens, DMs do not worry. Okay, these things sometimes happen, and sometimes you'll have an episode which takes 3-4 hours to record, and sometimes you'll go for 90 minutes. Sometimes the way it goes. But when I was looking through for creatures, I also found a creature which sounded really cool. And when I saw the picture, I was like, no! I saw that and I thought, that player is going to have issues with that. And I very graciously did not put that in there because I've learned certain things as a result. And I thought, that's fine, sort of thing. Because some people will have that reaction to some creatures.
Can I put a little add-on to the end of this one?
Of course you can.
It's also something I've learned myself. If, as the DM, you do mess up, you can move on from it. Even if you're the type of person who tends to beat themselves up quite badly over mistakes, you can always move forward from it. It goes back to the communication. You find out what you could have done better, and then you move on from that to ensure that it doesn't happen again.
Absolutely. Mistakes happen with D&D. It happens all the time. I mean, that was a mistake which was unfortunately what happened. I've made mistakes DMing before. I made the mistake of letting you guys, get a horse which is summoned by Ocarina.
I rolled high.
You did roll high. Caitlin had possession of a manticore, which that was not a plan at all. And because Matt messed up the steps at one point, Alili could had 10d10 lightning damage for her lightning breath. We have since adjusted those stats because Alili has leveled up, so we brought that back down. It's like she's got control of her lightning. So you know, that's an in-story reason for why it's not quite so powerful now. But mistakes happen. It's how you deal with it. And talking about it with your team and your DM is the way you go about it. Always communicate. Great advice.
Open communication is important, but I think also everybody has to be an adult about it. That means saying what's on your mind.
That is very, very true.
If it's a particular topic you can't talk about for reasons, then it's okay to say, I cannot talk about this, and leave until it's over. Because everybody has their limits.
Everyone's got a limit, obviously. I say, I'm making note of time. Alex, are we okay to say that it was you that affected or not?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, cool. Alex hopefully won't be too... isn't ashamed to say that he's the one who had the tag out during the session that Kerry was talking about. But that's because he has an aversion to the creatures that were used by Kerry. But by Alex's own admission, he didn't think it would have the effect it had. So sometimes, even with the best planning in the world and the "are you sure this is okay," sometimes it's just going to have that effect. So Kerry, don't beat yourself up.
I've been told that by many different people now.
Yes, and I'm sure that our listeners will say the same, mainly because lots of people would be quite happy watching Alex squirm, but we're quite happy that he's okay.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is that we learn by doing. As kids, we learn by making mistakes and learning don't do that again sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's not a bad thing.
Don't eat the vanilla essence as nice as it smells.
don't drink the food colouring either, thinking it tastes like the food colour. It doesn't. I was 32.
When I was a child, I managed to break a toe on my foot by playing Soul Calibur with Alex.
Oh, you swing to kick and you kick the sofa.
Don't do that.
You saw it. You broke your foot playing Soul Calibur.
Yeah. When Alex and I were lent Soul Calibur 2 at a very probably inappropriately young age.
Yes.
And we were playing fighting as the characters, and I went to kind of crane kick Alex. I missed, and I broke my little toe on the corner of the couch.
I see. Alex, is all your fault.
She did say it was my fault.
Now that we're adults, it's a funny memory.
Of course. Absolutely. And that's a nice funny gaming memory as well at the same time. So thank you. This is why we have you on the show, Kerry, because you bring these funny little anecdotes that I don't know about. It's fantastic. Right. Any more memories, Alex, that you want to discuss? Because we had three each roughly last time, so it's about time you had your third one.
You do your DM tip in your one memory, and then I'll go back to mine, because I'm still thinking. Because you haven't had a chance yet.
Just sort of gave my tip, really.
All right, then what's your memory?
I need a different memory from ones we've done. Got a lot of love for the time when I almost decided to eviscerate the entire party by using Witch Bolt as Moira. I would like to point out that was communication being used properly, because I was asking all the right questions before I did anything.
To give Matt full credit, he said he wanted to use Witch Bolt, and the next thing all you can hear is like the others going no.
Another good moment though, this is quite a throwaway moment as well, because you wouldn't, unless you know the backstory behind it, you wouldn't know it. It was from season 2, episode 1 of Edenoi, when you guys were just heading out of a tavern to head up the path to go and start the search for Drago. And I had no intention of doing this at all until Chad made Mick shout over, like, if you need a top up, remember Amber at the Hammer Time Brewery. And that's when I thought, open goal. She sent over a new shipment of pies. Do you want to try some? And and as you guys said earlier, it's Chad's voice like, no. And it just cracked me up, because at that point, there's lore now. And you build it up episode by episode by episode. And it's just brilliant.
Have you thought of one yet, Alex? Another memory? Because I have a question that might jog an answer, if so.
I've got three mini memories. So you, if you want to add something quickly, go ahead.
I was just going to say, if you, well, if you couldn't think of one, what was your memory from your favourite character you've been?
Oh, that's a good one. I want to quickly, three mini memories though, because they're only like a little ones each.
Mm.
One was way back when, in ye old time of plastic shit dice that cost me £5.99.
Yeah.
Good times.
Well, and back when we forgot to add modifiers to rolls.
Says me who still does that.
Is the time where we were fighting Robo Man, and I said to Alili, "Do you trust me?" And Alili is like, "Not really." And I'm like, "Good enough." And then I threw Alili at the boss.
Yeah.
How be it first.
Yes, you do.
Remembers.
Everybody remembers that one.
Another mini memory is playing Dakota, who is probably my favourite. I find that Charlie is very quickly escalating my list, which is a bit odd because I'm normally a magic caster myself. I prefer it to melee combat, but Charlie's very quickly climbing that list as my favourite character. But in the most recent session, well, not most recent, the one before the most recent, playing Dakota, I jumped through a window while being invisible because Dakota likes to spam invisibility. I grabbed a piece of glass off the shattered window. I snuck up behind the guard and then rolled a nat 20 on slitting his throat with a piece of glass.
Yeah, I'll do it.
And I think another little standout moment was, let me think, punching the unicorn in the face as Rain.
I love how, like, basically your memories are violent.
They stand out in Venice. Nothing wrong with
that. I mean, throwing Alili wasn't violent. That was...
It was!
Taking the initiative.
It was dragon abuse.
You threw the you threw the pint-sized dragonborn across the room.
And Alili makes a dangerous weapon when they come flying at you Halbeard first.
Well, that's true.
Can that I throw in a mini DM moment? A mini DM moment was the carnival. I came up with that 10 minutes before the episode because I realised that my episode was way too short. So the whole carnival thing was like 10 minutes before the session began. I'm like writing it down like mad, thinking, quick, hurry up, what can I do? Hungry Hungry Taras was the hardest thing to make up. That was like 2 minutes before we started the session.
Spoiler, by the way, you'll never hear about this, unfortunately, because it wasn't a recorded episode. But with the other party I play D&D with, you've heard of the spell Hunger of Hadar.
I love that spell, and I so can't wait to unlock it.
I've unlocked it, obviously, and... I've adapted each one, so instead of using Shatter as a warlock, I call it Shattered Dreams, because I think it just sounds cooler. Well, Hunger of Hadar, I've renamed as Hungry Hungry Hippos. So, so instead of it being this, like, tentacly blackness, all you hear is Hungry Hungry Hippos, Hungry Hungry Hippos. And it's hippos jumping out, basically, and it's absolutely hilarious. I took it and ran with it.
That is fantastic. That must have derailed the DM.
He called it his he called it my game show of nightmares.
That happened to me in the campaign I run for the other group that isn't a podcast. That's set in the same world, but like half a million years beforehand.
It's like a fun time, though.
I introduce a session, and I give them their plot. There's a man up the road repairing their broken down caravan cart. Dan's like, "Does he have nuts?" And I'm like, "I'm guessing so." I run up to him and smack him in the nuts.
That'll do it.
Oh, that just killed
again. Again, perfect point. Communication, people.
Communication's impossible in that group.
Absolutely.
That barbarian is you cannot communicate with that barbarian.
To be fair, I thought castrating him might make him calm down.
Are you talking about him in or out of character?
In and out of.
Exactly.
He's one of my longest friends, but fuck me, he's a nightmare to DM for.
You do a fine job, Alex. You really do. I think that'll pretty much wrap this episode, to be fair. I think we've given some nice tips and shared some great memories. Budding DMs out there, do take these tips away and use them to your advantage, or ignore if you want to.
I'd say my original tip. Don't.
Right, so time to do some T's and C's. Thank you to our sponsor, Triumph Chairs, for sponsoring the show. Use our code GameJunkies, all caps, at checkout to get 10% off at checkout. Kerry, you are still at Shira Beans?
Yep, I am Shira Beans on Twitter. I like to lurk.
Lurk, but...
And draw amazing art. If you haven't looked at the Dungeon Junkies Twitter page or my Twitter page, there's a fantastic full body piece of Dakota on there now. And it's incredible.
It is incredible. Go check out Kerry's artwork for sure. Alex?
You can find me at Spiderbread UK. You can find this show, main show, at Game Junkies Pod. And you can find our ever growing collection of madness known as Dungeon Junkies at Dungeon Junkies.
Absolutely. On Twitter. Yep. And find me at MattTechUK. We will be back in 2 weeks. Stay safe there, guys. Chris will be back next weekend, hopefully, with another great show. Do check him out at ChrisLewis37. On behalf of all of us, I'm Matt.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Kerry.
And we're the Game Junkies, and we're out of here.
Boom.
This podcast is a Matt Attack production for Visionaries Global Media.